Hey everyone, welcome back to The Forum, where science comes to socialize. I'm Aubrey, and I'm joined today by Cleo and Daniela, and we're coming to you on behalf of the Institute on Science for Global Policy.
Hey guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Okay, so we're back today to talk about another food safety and security related topic, but it's a topic that also relates quite a bit to nutrition. I've got to ask you two, how do y'all feel about kimchi?
Is that a Pokemon?
No, Daniela. She's talking about the fermented cabbage that you get in certain Asian restaurants. I mean, I've got to be in the mood for it, but it's not bad. Why do you ask?
Well, I ask because fermented foods and their probiotics in food safety and nutritional security is actually the topic of today's episode. So it should actually be quite interesting.
You say that like we're not always interesting.
Oh, not at all. I just mean that we're talking about foods that most people eat every day. Why don't you kick us off, Daniela?
Okay. The debate in question today featured Dr. Linda Duffy from the National Institutes of Health. Her paper, titled Microbial Food Fermentation, Enhancing Nutritional Fitness, was debated at the 2015 ISGP conference at North Dakota State University.
Right, at the conference titled Food Security and Diet-Linked Public Health Challenges.
So the name of the game stemming from this paper and debate is really biopreservation of food, which Dr. Duffy defined as using natural or controlled microbiota and antimicrobial chemicals to lengthen the shelf life of foods, essentially making them safe to eat for a longer period of time.
Stop right there. Before you go any further, let me ask on behalf of our listeners, what are microbiota and antimicrobial chemicals?
Microbiota are just all of the microorganisms, bacteria and such, that live in a particular place at a particular time. You might have heard of the term gut microbiota, for instance, which would describe the collection of microorganisms living in your digestive tract. But I don't want to spend too much time on this now, because I know we'll be talking about it in a bit more detail later.
And antimicrobial chemicals are compounds that control/prevent microbial growth via disinfecting, sanitizing, or hindering microbial development.
Thank you for that. Okay, let's continue then. As it turns out, one of the most common forms of food biopreservation is fermentation, which we're all familiar with in one way or another.
Totally true. Fermentation occurs when bacteria and enzymes convert carbohydrates within the food to alcohol or organic acids.
This functions to preserve the food, and it also changes the food's flavor. Anyone who's ever eaten kimchi, our token fermented food of the day, knows that cabbage is pretty unrecognizable.
What many people don't realize, though, is that fermenting food doesn't just make the food last and trick you into thinking you're eating something else. It also supplements the food with amino acids, vitamins, and minerals.
And it makes the food easier to digest. It's also thought that fermenting fruits or vegetables makes them more nutritious than their raw counterparts.
That's true. Plus, they're cheap to make, and for this reason, have helped to sustain communities during periods of famine in history. And fermenting can occasionally improve food quality, requiring less salt to be added to the food for taste. Take that, Aubrey, our resident salt lover.
Oh, no. I can always add salt to things. Trust me.
I do not understand you.
Don't forget that many toxins found naturally within a lot of foods can be eliminated or detoxified during the fermentation process. In Greenland, for instance, people have learned that fermenting a certain shark species turns this toxic non-food item into a non-toxic, perfectly reasonable food item.
Oh yeah, and fermenting will also save cats stuck in high trees and drive your grandma to the grocery store.
That was seamless, Daniela. A fermentation will not, in fact, do these latter things frequently saved for good-hearted people, but there is a point here, and that point is that fermentation has a lot of benefits in the food safety and nutrition sphere.
And humans have really been taking advantage of this process for many, many years now. Hey, here's some trivia for you. How early in history do you think humans first began fermenting foods?
Oh man, I have no idea. Probably before the United States was even a thing, though.
I agree with Daniela for sure, but I don't know just how far back this culinary tradition goes. I mean, you're really asking the wrong person here. My knowledge of cooking doesn't exist beyond diners, drive-ins, and dives, and other Food Network programming.
How irrelevant. As it turns out, the first record of fermentation might actually come from 6000 BC in Middle Eastern and Asian cultures. Almost all past civilizations have had at least one fermented food in their culinary repertoires.
And we really do exploit fermentation presently. Between my breakfast yogurt and my dinner table wine, those are just two fermented products I consume several times a week. Maybe a bit more.
Okay, let's keep a tally. We've mentioned kimchi, yogurt, wine.
Cheese! Can't live without that one.
Ew, okay, what else?
Sauerkraut?
A little less ew.
There are several Indian food products that are fermented.
Exactly.
Beer counts too, right?
Yep. Today, thousands of years after they first came to be, fermented foods are making a comeback in terms of their sheer popularity. In fact, to make my current point, I'm going to be really lame and throw back to our very first episode of the forum, which we called Children of the Corn. I remember a certain line very clearly. There's no way I can live up to Barbara's original iteration, but I'll try. Okay, ready? You mean the craze isn't just Snapchatting a selfie with your alpaca? Gosh, that was terrible. In any case, the reboot version of the day is...
You mean the craze isn't just face swapping with a head of kale?
The craze isn't just Instagramming a pic of your favorite superfood?
Nope, the craze is embracing fermented foods, which have been marketed recently as having probiotic characteristics and health benefits.
And Instagramming a picture of your fermented food before you eat it.
As long as you use an appropriate filter, everyone knows that life looks so much better through a lens of Mayfair or Valencia.
Instagram-worthy or not, innovative technologies for capitalizing on food fermentation involve using lactic acid bacteria, or LAB, in combination with traditional fermentation methods to prevent food spoilage and inhibit pathogen growth.
Though, it's worth mentioning that 80% of fermented foods are produced at least partially by natural fermentation processes. Regardless, the human body has evolved over time to efficiently use lactic acid, making this LAB approach really practical.
Right. Fermented foods, their probiotics, and the human microbiome have really co-evolved. By the way, before we get too far, let's clarify that probiotics are really just the microorganisms present in the fermented foods we'll be talking about so much today.
I like to think of it like this. The fermented food is touted as being good for your health because of the probiotics it contains. The probiotics are the microorganisms that can make you healthier. And we like to call them probiotics because telling people that they're eating bacteria probably isn't the best marketing strategy.
Plus, you can't get a much better feel-good word than probiotic. I mean, pro means good and bio means life. The word literally translates to good life.
I've never thought of that one.
So we focus in on what fermented foods and probiotics are, but let's spend a minute or two going back to the human microbiome, which Cleo and Daniela touched on at the beginning of the show. The microbiome is all of the microbial communities living on or in a person, and it's actually acquired at birth.
And here I thought my longest friendship was 7 years old. Sorry, Lauren, but it looks like my internal bacterium friends have you beat.
Well, maybe. The microbiome community can diminish and change over time, for sure, based on things like diet.
While the science is still coming in, it's possible that a diminished microbiome can be reseeded with key microorganisms. But the science isn't 100% yet. Even if this was possible, it isn't clear whether the restored microbiome would be resilient and resist further changes.
Okay, so we've framed fermentation as both a tradition and as a fad, and now we've also delved into the weeds of how the probiotics within fermented foods can contribute to the human microbiome. But Dr. Duffy asserts that we should change the narrative a bit and turn fermentation into a tool for food security.
Actually, the debaters widely agreed that fermented foods would become vital tools to feed the rapidly growing human population. I just love consensus.
I mean, it makes sense. If fermentation is a food preservation technique and food insecure regions simply need food...
Well, not only that, but it could make that food more nutritionally dense, aka reducing nutritional deficiencies.
Right, but this would surely require an expansion of the raw materials, So raw foods that we use to produce fermented products. And it also probably involved more strategically using the fermentation process to target toxins that traditionally make foods unsafe.
How sure are we that fermentation increases food safety, though? When I think of bacteria chewing up and spitting out my food before I eat it, well, I can't help but think that might put safety at a risk.
It seems that'd be a reasonable misconception. Let me answer your question with an example, since I'm sure that's exactly what you were hoping for.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, it's an instructive example. The example is that fermented infant weaning foods are thought to play a role in preventing child malnutrition, lactose intolerance, and stomach bugs in tropical regions. So I guess what I mean is, if the fermentation is done right, we should be eliciting positive outcomes.
Another example is the fact that NASA has considered fermented foods to address the microbiome imbalances frequently experienced by astronauts in space. Dehydrated ice cream with a side of soy sauce. Yum.
These examples are just based on known benefits of currently used fermented foods. Dr. Duffy says that as we collect more evidence of nutritional benefits and general safety of fermented foods, we could see a major surge in their consumption. For example, research suggests that fermented dairy products are some of the best ways to deliver probiotics into the system.
But there's a huge consumer demand for non-dairy equivalents, which makes sense since, you know, it seems like half the world is lactose intolerant. Well, maybe that's a bit dramatic. Maybe it's just more like half of my friends.
Well, in any case, research into fermented cereal, fruit, and vegetable products is ongoing to determine whether they can be suitable alternatives for probiotic-containing fermented dairy foods.
And this could be valuable for not only developed nations looking to improve their diets, but also for developing nations whose people seek everyday micronutrient deficiencies.
I'm totally seeing why this paper was debated at a food security conference now.
Yep, therein lies the connection.
But you know, we should be careful to clarify that there is a lot of scientific literature discussing probiotic consumption already in existence. The real challenge in creating nutritional guidelines or recommendations based on probiotics lies in confirming the safety of specific bacterial strains and their dosages.
And in figuring out the exact benefits they could provide. I mean, we are talking about adding live bacterial cultures to people's food. And that's not necessarily bad, but it could be bad if we don't know exactly what we're doing.
If fermented foods are to become widely accepted by the public, you know, besides the classic kimchi and chobani, their nutritional value and overall safety will have to be confidently certified.
That's for sure. If you can convince me that a fermented Oreo wouldn't be quite as nutritionally useless for me, I'm all ears.
You know, somehow I don't think that's what we're really going for here, but I applaud your enthusiasm.
Well, conclusive evidence about the health benefits of probiotics and the diet as a whole is still emerging anyway. But it was discussed by debaters how positive impacts on the consumer's metabolic pathways have been confirmed by omic science.
Sorry, but omic science? You're triggering bad memories of high school physics and circuit boards. Ohm is a unit of resistance, right?
Yes, I'm proud of you.
Crushed it.
But here we're talking about a different type of ohm. Omic science is a holistic molecular analysis of cellular and tissue structures in an organism. More specifically, omic technologies detect and track small molecule metabolites to better understand biological systems.
These technologies are helping us to understand how the body is absorbing the nutrients provided by fermented foods, not to mention how the microbial community that resides in the human body changes based on environment, medicines taken, and other physiological changes.
I still crushed it, though.
Yes, yes, you did, Cleo. Regardless, we're faced with the difficulty of incorporating fermented, probiotic-enriched foods into dietary recommendations. Dr. Duffy stresses that in order for these recommendations to take shape, ecological principles, safety measures, and health indicators must be, quote, rigorously tested.
To get to this point, our presenter suggested that organizations such as the Food and Agriculture Organization or the USDA Nutrition Centers work to understand the integration between biotechnologies, environmental factors, and food impacts that we could expect from inserting microbial cells more frequently into our food system.
It was suggested that if this occurred, an internationally harmonized set of food standards specifically pertaining to food fermentation products could be established by the Codex Alimentarius Commission. These standards would include guidelines on product integrity and hygienic food prep.
As a reminder, the Codex Alimentarius is a set of food standards that seek to make sure that food and food trade is safe, high quality, and fair. It's overseen by the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization.
The debaters also argued that however fermented foods are regulated, it will be important to prove that the bacterial cultures used remain genetically diverse and not resistant to antibiotics.
That's right. They agreed that each bacterial strain should be shown to succumb to at least 2 drugs in case of adverse events.
I mean, not to discount the issue, but preventing antibiotic resistance is always a challenge when we try to use bacteria for any practical purpose. Are there other challenges associated with food fermentation specifically?
Well, Dr. Duffy also reminds us that a food fermentation and probiotic system will depend entirely on the base level agricultural system, aka being able to grow what we want to grow, and later ferment or supplement in an effective and environmentally appropriate way.
This is my cup of tea right here. This agricultural effort will really depend on habitat restoration, removal of invasives, and promotion of native species growth, at least according to our presenter, anyway.
It wasn't just Dr. Duffy. The debaters agreed that maintaining a stable food system requires preservation of genetic diversity in produce, livestock, and the fermenting bacteria themselves. This would involve identifying the specific microbes involved in agricultural fermentation and understanding their activity.
Also to be considered is the biology of the foods themselves. Specifically, we would benefit from performing metabolic profiling of the microbes we want to use in the fermentation processes.
So we can better understand what the fermentation process actually does to the plant, which in turn has health impacts for the consumer. This goes back to the whole, we need to understand the proposed health benefits better concept we introduced earlier.
Okay, so let's say we figure out all of these nuances and fermented food products can become a realistic part of our everyday food system. How do we get the public to actually want to eat them? Because if we're not fermenting Oreos, I'm really not sure what kind of leverage we would have.
According to debaters, public acceptance would require a pretty hefty media campaign involving both mainstream and social media. It'd have to involve trusted scientists, policymakers, and the public itself.
And that's because we don't just have to worry about the marketing of positive health outcomes here. We actually have to worry about people agreeing to eat the foods at all, since a lot of fermented foods are thought to be unappetizing.
Here come the visions of spoon-feeding adults using the open wide for the spoon plane tactic. This almost seems like a ridiculous conversation to be having. I mean, convincing people to eat something because it's beneficial but doesn't taste good? Come on, people cannot be that high maintenance.
Oh, but they absolutely can be. The U.S. in particular has been comparatively slow in adopting widespread food fermentation, and the nation's throwaway mentality, basically throwing away food because of excess, bruising, or expiration dates, has caused Americans to waste tons of food that could be made super nutritious using fermentation.
Maybe that's why the debaters suggested that fermented foods in the marketplace be redefined, essentially calling them something else to make them sound more appealing.
Oh, you mean like how you sometimes hear food waste called garbage chic, and it's become marketable in certain specialty restaurants.
That's exactly the idea, Cleo.
I'm so on point today.
Maybe you should have some fermented food or beverage to celebrate.
Maybe I will.
All right, I guess it's time to wrap things up then. We hope you all learned a little bit about fermented foods today and why they aren't just interesting because of their flavor.
Yeah, to recap, these foods can be nutritionally dense and even aid in the fight against food insecurity. They've been around in almost all cultures for a really long time, and we might be on the verge of seeing them become even more commonplace.
So, how do you feel about fermented foods making up a larger part of your diet? Are you game? I mean, they've got to taste better than fried grasshoppers, right?
Are you concerned about the safety of eating bacterially treated foods? Are you equally concerned if you're an avid yogurt or kimchi eater?
We hope to hear your thoughts on this very niche yet very relevant topic on social media. Reach us on Twitter at ISGP Forum or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ISGP Forum.
Send us your fermented food Instagrams. Gosh, I'm such a foodie.
I was going to say millennial, but anyway, thank you all for tuning in and joining us at the Institute on Science for Global Policy today. Happy fermenting, and we'll see you next time right here on the forum.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.